I'm Nick Tricarci, a partner at KPMG, and there is a lot of complexity and technical jargon out there when it comes to talking about accounting. My goal is to cut through all of that noise and explain things in plain English in this new podcast series that we're calling By Analogy. The name is a play on a phrase that we love to use in the accounting profession, as we often analogize to different accounting standards. However, we will not be making analogies to obscure accounting pronouncements from yesteryear, but rather to things that we all encounter in our day-to-day lives. The idea is to explain a rather mundane subject matter, if I'm being honest, in a more entertaining, relatable, and memorable way. And if you have an idea for an analogy, or if you want us to cover a specific topic on our show, please shoot me a note. My email is included in the episode description. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about accounting for transferable income tax credits. And while tax credits have been around for a very long time, the idea of a transferable tax credit, meaning one that you can buy and sell, is a relatively new phenomenon in the United States, and it's probably one of the hottest topics in accounting right now. See, historically, companies could only really benefit from income tax credits if they already owed the government money. But let's say you're a startup company that hasn't turned profitable yet. Well, again, historically speaking, tax credits really wouldn't have been much help to you. But that all changed when the Inflation Reduction Act was introduced in the US. And now, for the first time at the federal level, companies have the option to sell income tax credits in the open market for cash. The idea here is to incentivize more companies to invest in and produce renewable energy. And that one new feature, this one new avenue for monetization, has put us in uncharted accounting territory. US GAAP is silent on how to deal with income tax credits that can either be used on your tax return or sold for cash. So where does this leave us? Well, companies must now chart their own path by making a series of accounting policy elections, which brings us to our analogy for today's episode. Personally, I like to think about accounting for transferable tax credits as like going to an all-you-can-eat buffet of accounting policy choices. And I'm not just talking about any buffet. You know, we're at a Vegas-style extravagant spread. Think lobster tails and prime rib and, of course, cascading chocolate fountains. The choices here are seemingly endless. And joining me today as my dinner guest is Ashby Quorum. Ashby is the partner in charge of our accounting for income taxes group in KPMG's Washington National Tax Practice. And he's probably forgotten more about income taxes than many of us will ever know. On this episode, we talk about the fundamental decision to account for transferable tax credits as either income taxes or government grants, the myriad of policy choices that come with either of those approaches, and how these choices ultimately impact your bottom line. Ashby Quorum, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Nick. Glad to be here.
I hope you brought your stretchy pants, Ashby, because we've got a lot of work to do. You know, I explained, Ashby, in the cold open that we're going to be talking about transferable tax credits, but I want to be a bit more specific. I'd like to talk about transferable investment tax credits, or ITCs, as we sometimes refer to them as. And the reason is that's going to allow you and I to work through the full spread of accounting policies that are available under US GAAP. But before we dive in, I want to ask if you could just first set the table for our listeners and explain what we mean by investment tax credits.
Okay, sure, Nick. Although the term investment tax credit is used in Topic 740 and is commonly used when discussing the accounting for credits, there is no formal definition of an investment tax credit in the accounting literature. But we believe that for something to be an investment tax credit, it should have two key characteristics. And that first one is that it's an incentive to acquire an asset, such as a renewable energy facility. And the second is that the incentive is in the form of a credit, as opposed to some other incentive that may be an exclusion from taxable income or an additional deduction. So two key things: it needs to be for an asset and in the form of a credit.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. I want to emphasize that point that ITCs are generally associated with assets, and specifically, you know, long-term assets like PP&E, because that's going to be important when we start talking about the government grant model under IAS 20. So, all right, with that, I'm ready to head up to the buffet and start making our plate. So, you know, contrary to my normal strategy at an all-you-can-eat buffet, I want to start with the main course. And then, you know, from there, I think we can figure out what sides we're going to load up on. So, Ashby, what is the main course at our accounting policy buffet? And by that, I mean, what's the fundamental decision somebody needs to make when accounting for these types of credits?
Well, that very first fundamental decision that you have to make is for these transferable but not refundable credits is whether to account for the credits as a government grant or as part of income taxes under Topic 740. The literature doesn't tell you exactly how to account for these, but it's thought that you have that policy choice. So either the government grant or as an income tax under Topic 740.
Okay, so we've got our first policy choice. And before we keep going, because I think it's important that we pace ourselves here, I want to just talk now, big picture. What does that mean? You know, how does that one decision ultimately impact someone's financial statements?
Well, it is a pretty significant decision. As a general rule, a credit that is accounted for as a government grant is going to be presented somewhere in pre-tax income. Generally, it's going to need at least a probable, or for tax people, a should level recognition threshold when there's uncertainty in the law. You know, conversely, if a credit's accounted for in income taxes as part of Topic 740, it's going to come through the income taxes line on the income statement. However, later on, you'll see there's a variety of combinations of accounting policies that you can use if you're account for it within Topic 740. And some of those can actually result in the credit being in pre-tax income, so a little closer to the government grant answer. Also, if you go the Topic 740 route and account for as an income tax, you're generally going to use a more likely than not threshold when considering uncertainty in the tax law.
Okay, so some pretty important points you just raised there, notably with respect to when someone is going to recognize this tax credit in their financial statements and ultimately how it's going to be presented within those financial statements. So personally, I think the policy choices under Topic 740 are a bit meatier, so we'll call that the turf to our surf and turf. And I want to start there. So let's head down the 740 path. What is the next policy choice someone needs to make once they've decided to account for these as income taxes?
Well, you may want to warm up with maybe an appetizer, though it's a pretty important one. But a first one would be how you want to think about the valuation allowance if you're in Topic 740. And there's an accounting policy choice there on whether you either consider or ignore the expected proceeds when you have a transferable credit that you expect to transfer. And by that, if you consider the expected proceeds, then you set your valuation allowance to reduce the deferred tax asset for the credit down to the amount that you expect you'll ultimately realize in the sale. And you'll adjust that as you get better knowledge on what you'll actually sell it for. Conversely, you could choose to ignore the sale and measure and determine your valuation allowance just following your normal guidance and your own profitability. Often that will result in kind of what I'll call one extreme or the other. Often that may result in either no valuation allowance at all if you're generally a profitable company, or could result in a full valuation allowance if you're an unprofitable company.
Okay, so again, that, you know, when we're talking about how much of the benefit we're going to recognize from this tax credit, this is an important choice, because if you do consider, you know, we generally expect that these are going to be sold at a discount, right? So there should be some VA probably set up on day one. Whereas if you ignore it, like you said, you might not end up having a valuation allowance at all. But then when you do go to sell it, you could end up recognizing a loss at that point in time. So, all right, let's keep moving through the stations and tell me what's the next policy choice someone needs to make under 740?
Okay, this next one's a pretty big one. So this is getting to the meat of the meal, the main course here, where you've got to decide whether you're going to use something called a flow-through method or the deferral method. With the flow-through method being that you get to immediately recognize the income tax benefit of that credit in the year that it arises. Or you can choose a deferral method with the result that the benefit's recognized over the productive life of the asset.
Okay, so again, huge important decision, right? Do you recognize this upfront or over time? And I want to go down the deferral path, because I kind of think about that like going to the salad bar station here. You know, you've got the choice to pick the salad, but then you got to figure out, what do you want on that salad? What kind of dressing do you want? Meaning there's more choices, right, that come with it. So what additional policy choices come with applying the deferral method under 740?
Well, we've got several there to apply. And the first is, how do you want to present the amount on the balance sheet? Since you're deferring and not recognizing immediately, you're going to have some amount on the balance sheet, and you can present that either as a reduction to the carrying amount of the, you know, related asset, you know, sometimes referred to as a contra asset, to reduce that carrying amount, or you can set up on the liability side of the balance sheet as some kind of deferred income. Now, if you present it as an adjustment to the carrying amount of the asset, well, that opens another door. You have a further policy choice as to whether you present the credit as a reduction of depreciation expense as you recognize a benefit over time, or you can bring that in on the income tax line as an income tax benefit over time. Conversely, if you on the balance sheet, if you decide to present as deferred income, then we believe that the benefit should be recognized on the income tax line as you recognize it.
Okay, so we hit on measurement, recognition, and now this is presentation. So we're basically running the full gamut of the codification here. So on the 740 model, I also just want to add, anytime we're talking about taxes, we can't forget about deferred taxes. And, you know, needless to say, there could be deferred tax consequences to all of these policy choices, which, you know, as you may have guessed, come with more policy choices. But we're not going to get into those right now, because honestly, Ashby, I'm ready to head back up to the buffet for seconds. It is all you can eat after all. And this time I'm thinking that government of grant approach looks pretty tasty. So let's say somebody wanted to go down the path of accounting for these as government grants rather than income taxes that we just talked about. What is the first policy choice that comes with that decision?
Currently, U.S. GAAP doesn't have any guidance on the accounting for government grants. There's some authoritative guidance right now on disclosures for government grants, but nothing really telling you what to do on the accounting side. And so there's three general models that companies tend to use by analogy. The first and most common is what's called an IF-20 grant model, and it's based on guidance in international financial reporting standards, because those standards do have guidance on government grants. However, companies also sometimes analogize to some guidance in subtopic 958-605, which is a contribution model, which is, you know, based on guidance designed for the not-for-profit industry. And then finally, some companies analogize to subtopic 450-30, which is the gain contingency guidance and follow a gain contingency model. So these are three commonly analogized to models as of today. The FASB does have a project underway to consider incorporating a model into U.S. GAAP and tentatively heading down the path of doing something very similar to the IFRS standard, that IAS-20 model.
Okay, so first, if someone chooses government grant, then they got to figure out, well, which government grant model am I going to pick? And, you know, given what you just said about where the FASB's headed and what I think is just generally applied in practice, let's stick with IAS-20. I think that's a fairly common approach that companies use for government grants. So if we go into IAS-20, is there another policy choice somebody needs to make under that model?
Well, of course, this is an all-you-can-eat buffet. We've got lots of choices here. So even within IAS-20, there are differences. And here we're talking about ITC, so those are related to assets. And IAS-20 has, you know, guidance related to grants related to assets. And some of those choices are very similar to what we discussed under the deferral method a minute ago. So a first choice you have to make is how to present the benefit, that deferred benefit, on the balance sheet. And so it could be either an adjustment to the carrying amount of an asset, or it could be on the liability side of the balance sheet and present as deferred income.
Okay. And like you said, this is all you can eat. So I'm assuming we've also got a choice when it comes to the P&L presentation.
Of course. So in the income statement, if the credit is presented as a reduction to the carrying amount of the asset, in that case, we do believe it would always be presented as a reduction to depreciation expense. If it's presented on the balance sheet as deferred income, then we think you have the choice of presenting it either as a reduction to depreciation or some form of other income, still within pre-tax, but some form of other income. So similar, but not exactly the same as what we had under the deferral method under topic 740.
Okay. Yeah. And a lot of, you know, presentation type choices. You know, one thing we talked about under 740 was the measurement, right? When we were talking about the valuation allowance, how does a company measure the amount of the benefit if they're applying IAS 20?
Well, once again, it's a policy choice.
So here
a company can, and I think what most frequently happens is they measure it at fair value, but we would also accept a measurement at a nominal value of zero. So that can be a pretty significant choice right there.
Yeah, because, you know, fair value, I think we would generally expect that's going to be the proceeds, right, that somebody expects to get when they sell the credit, whereas nominal value, like you said, is zero. I will just caution our listeners, if you want to go with the nominal value approach, we believe that's something you should talk about with your accounting advisors, your auditors, and potentially pre-clear it with the SEC based on some conversations we've had with their staff. So just make sure you're thinking through that. All right, Ashby, I think our listeners probably need some time to digest all of this, given we've gone through, I think, 10 or so different accounting policies. And while they do that, I wanted to just try to quickly recap, and we've hit on some of these things, but really to compare and contrast, what does all this actually mean at the end of the day? And I want to start with the fact that you really could end up in the exact same place, regardless of whether you choose income taxes or government grants. You know, for example, if you apply the deferral method under 740 and you account for it as a contra asset and you do the same thing under IAS 20, you could end up in the same spot. But if we stick with that scenario, so deferral method under 740, you could get different results based on those follow-on policy choices that are available under each. In this case, I think the main difference is really P&L geography, and you mentioned it a few times, Ashby. Under 740, you can get to presenting this within income taxes, which is an after-tax line item, whereas under IAS 20, you're going to have to show this in pre-tax. So really presentation in that case under the deferral method. But I really think the biggest difference is if somebody chooses to apply the flow-through method under 740, because as you mentioned, right, that can result in somebody recognizing the entire credit immediately in their income statement. Whereas if you're in IAS 20, you have to spread that over the useful life of the asset. So that could have a real timing difference from a P&L perspective, in addition to, you know, differences in geography. All right, with that, you know, look, we can't go to an all-you-can-eat buffet without getting dessert, right? So I want to, you know, wrap up this conversation, Ashby, with talking about what I think is the dessert of the accounting world, the statement of cash flows. And I want to ask you, you know, do these policy choices that we're making on the balance sheet and income statement have an impact on the cash flow presentation?
Yes, they potentially can. If someone uses a grant model and they net the benefits against the PP&E or whatever asset they acquired on the balance sheet, then we generally believe that the right answer there would be for the benefit to be presented as an investing inflow in the statement of cash flows. Conversely, if the ITC is not netted against the asset acquired, then the proceeds would generally be thought of to be an operating cash flow.
I think that's super important as somebody's thinking through this all and which suite of policy choices to make, that you don't just focus on balance sheet and income statement, think it all the way through and how it's going to look on the cash flow and what that might mean, you know, to an investor. And I actually, Ashby, I've got a confession to make. I've got a huge sweet tooth, so I'm going to double dip on desserts here. And I want to talk about disclosures for a second. If this is material to your company, then, you know, we believe it's important to have clear disclosures in the financial statements, given how many policy choices are available and the potential for diversity in practice. Under US GAAP, we think it's important to disclose those policy choices so that investors can potentially, you know, compare two different companies to one another, even if their accounting is different. And so with that, let me close by saying, we've only really just scratched the surface on accounting for transferable tax credits. If you're still hungry for more, please make sure to check out our updated tax credits handbook, which we just released. So it's hot off the press. It's packed with new examples and practical guidance on things like, what do you do when you buy or sell one of these? Or what if you have an equity method investment that generates these types of credits, which in that case, it really takes things to a whole different level. So please check that out. And Ashby, let me say thank you for joining me at this buffet. I'm personally stuffed and I enjoyed having you as my dinner guest.
Appreciate you inviting me, and I too ate a little bit too much.
Thank you for listening. We've got plenty of new episodes coming your way. And if you like what you heard, please give us 5 stars and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And for more in-depth coverage of all your favorite accounting topics, make sure to check out our website at frv.kpmg.us.